This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, as we say hi on a Friday. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Of course, Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shah back at the South Point, Las Vegas. Got a packed show for you today. Do have the two in the pre coming up tonight. You've got Carolina at the Giants. We'll get into who's in, who's out. Let you know where the number sits right now, both side and total. Cincinnati and Atlanta. Atlanta, that's a long line there. Up the 6, 6.5. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. College football, how about this? We are 8 days away from Ireland. Of course, Notre Dame and Navy open up a week from tomorrow, week zero, as they call it, to kind of hide the weeks. And it was supposed to be played, as we say hi to Amal and Dustin, supposed to be played 3 years ago, this game. Canceled because of COVID. It actually is listed as a neutral site game, although the Irish are playing in Ireland. So my assumption is Navy feels like, hold up, that doesn't make a ton of sense. What's up, Amal?
Not much. You're absolutely right about that. But you know what? I always favor the U.S. Naval Academy in any situation there. But despite the fact that they're going to be on the road, not literally, I just wanted to try and rile Dustin up since he got me yesterday.
Well, no, they're not on the road. They're on the water, because isn't Ireland an island?
God, this guy's on fire. He's right. He's right. He is right.
Factual.
Hey, Patrick, just come back to me when you ask me.
Body of land surrounded by water.
Listen, next question when it concerns the Dodgers, come back to me in 45 minutes.
Okay, 18-18 last night. Game finishes up. Now, remember, the 36 as far as the total is important last night, because you could have bet at one point 35, 35 and a half. You could have gone under the 37, 37 and a half. So again, the importance of getting the right number last night when talking totals betting and having multiple outs. Just wanted to mention that as we get closer and closer to the season, timing the number is important. Getting the best of it's important. And the 18-18 tie, how much of that game did you two watch last night?
I did not see any of the game. I was following it a little bit closer in terms of just the play-by-play, because I remember we talked about it, and I was surprised when I saw the initial eight, because I didn't see the safety. I started watching around the, midway through the second quarter on the phone. And I'll tell you what, guys, how about the benefit of getting that eight-point lead? You're sitting there thinking you're in pretty good position, and then I see the tie. Plus four was a pretty good number, never really in peril if you had the Browns.
Yeah, the three of us were all in on the four. Ends up closing the Eagles 3.5, an 18-18 tie with the Browns and Eagles. Again, we've got a closer of 36. If you did go over, you could have won at 35, 35 and a half, under 37, 37 and a half. Big guy, anything from last night?
Well, I think it's important to remember that you can tie in the preseason as part of your handicapping. I think that's important to remember. But and then secondly, I didn't watch much of the game. Everything I saw was via highlights on Twitter. So my question is, I guess the next time we have Johnny Avello on, when is DraftKings going to post the market for Deshaun Watson's next team? Because the quarterback of the future is on this Cleveland roster.
Are you talking about DTR?
Uh-oh. Yes.
You're talking DTR, who's been ridiculous in the preseason, no doubt. Okay, good stuff. Speaking of a teammate, we are going to do something fun, and that is we're going to get involved in Circa Survivor. The big guy came up with a great idea. As a family, as a show, why don't we get involved in Circa Survivor? No surprise here, Amal Shah wasn't interested. So we had to pivot, and Mike Somich, who's going to join us later on the show, is going to be part of our little three-way. Amal, any reasons? Now, I was told you didn't want to be involved in Content is King. One day you'll get that. I was told you didn't want to be involved with the two of us as far as a show and Survivor because you didn't want to give away your secrets, as if the probability is you're going to win the contest on your own.
Well, first of all, I should have in the first year. I screwed up. I was in week 15. I switched my pick because I always hated Finley so much at North Carolina State when he was starting in the game against the Steelers. And I made a mistake in that one. Should have closed out on that one. But no, it wasn't that. I don't even remember. Dustin says, hey, should we do this? I didn't say anything. He just assumed. He just...
You're lying to me, big guy? Come on.
No. His reaction was, look, I like Survivor talk, but if I'm going to enter, I'm not going to give away to the world what our strategies are.
I said ours. I didn't say...
Look, unfortunately, there was no cameras rolling, so I can't go back in time. But so far in the last 24 hours, I am batting 1,000 at remembering how conversations
that's
go.
That's facts. That's facts. Well, I guess, Amal, we'll
You can still help us along if you like.
I'm willing to join in. I got no qualms with it. He just ran with the assumption. I'm very precise in what I said.
With assumptions. I'm the middleman.
I'm going based on what he said.
He comes to me and he said, Amal's not interested. I was like, are you sure? And he said he wants to keep strategy to himself, which I know you've had success with Circa Survivor in the past. So I completely respect that. And we had to pivot because we're both broke. I mean, that's what we had to do. We had to find a third. That's really what it comes down to.
But here's the problem. If we split it with another person now when we eventually win the contest, that's another person to split it with. That's the issue.
Yeah, we got to chop the pot. Not interested necessarily in
that. Well, that's why. So if Dustin decides to allow me to participate in this, I don't know how many other participants there are. You know, we're talking about 8 million now going down to 2 points. Instead of 4, it goes down to 2.6. Is Mike in also?
Yeah, Samich is going to get involved. How many Circa Survivor contestants were there last year?
Does anybody know? 8,000, I want to say. I can find it. I want to say it was like 8,000. Am I lowballing it?
How many ways did they have to chop? Does anybody know that answer?
I thought last year was 5.
Was that the first year?
No, that was the second year.
I think there were less winners last year than the year before. The year before, there was a bunch.
This is good promotion for Circa Survivor out of nowhere. When do the submissions have to be made, and when do we have to get it in as far as the cash for Circa Survivor, big guy?
Prior to week one at some point. And by the way, if you use the Thursday night football teams, one of them, and you lose, you can buy back in.
Yeah, but so you're saying, in essence, you're going to use Kansas City or Detroit in week one?
Yes, which Detroit's a bad play, not because it's Detroit, but because you might have to save them for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. By the way, Dustin, do you know off the top of your head what the parameters are this year in terms of the game? So, Patrick,
Christmas is its own day.
Okay, Christmas,
Thanksgiving. There might be one more in there.
Got it.
Yeah, I'm doing it for the show. I don't get involved. Contests don't appeal to me at all. I know I'm a bit of an alien here. I just, you know, go game to game by myself, mostly betting on soccer, frankly. So I don't get involved. I don't know. I don't generally get involved in the contest, but I think it will be fun, kind of, as long as we stay alive.
Yeah, I mean,
That's really the key. And it's all on you, big guy. Staying alive for content is very important on the show.
Well, I mean, me staying alive in general at the end of football season is also a debate if that's going to happen. So, I mean, we can go either way with that one. Look, as far as content goes, we need to just get more than 1 week out of it. That's all I care. Right now, my mindset is 1 week. We need at least, well, I guess 2 weeks. I want 1 week with a win and then a second week. And if we get through that, I feel like it was worth it.
I think we can do that. Let's do this. Let's start. We'll get the baseball out of the way, not necessarily dismissing it, but there's a couple of things. You have a couple of angles. I just wanted to bring this up. Have you guys checked in on the Mariners? I was waking up this morning kind of looking through a 6-4 win over the Royals. Rodriguez, I believe it was the 8th, hit a 3-run bomb to take the lead there. How about this? They've won 16 of 21, and I believe you brought the team up yesterday, Amal. They've won 16 of 21. They're a half game out in the wild card. And Rodriguez, the stud outfielder, 5 hits yesterday, 5 ribbies. Last seven games, he's got 16 hits. He's on a freaking tear. A 3-run bomb in the 8th, as I mentioned last night, to beat the Royals. Okay, it's the Royals. They're on the road, and the Mariners, who were a team, I think, you know, akin to the Padres and others, a team of all that we had high hopes for coming into the season, a slow start, all of a sudden, here they come down the stretch.
No question about it. When you look at some of the guys up front, they're starters. Kirby, 3.23, Castillo, 3.23, Gilbert, 3.8. These are ERAs for the starters there. And you mentioned it, Julio Rodriguez, the big 3-run bomb last night, or yesterday afternoon, excuse me, trailing 4-2 in Kansas City. I'm telling you guys, they are coming. I think they've got a legitimate shot. When you look at the American League, as well as Baltimore has played, I don't think you can make an argument for any team to be an overwhelming favorite. Patrick, I don't know where you come out on it, Dustin, where you are, but as well as the Orioles, whether it's Texas, Houston, whomever, I think a case can be made for a longer shot to come out of the ALCS from the American League, a team like Seattle.
I totally agree. Dustin, on the Mariners, anything? And then you want to hit your angle we talked about earlier today.
You know, I sometimes wonder why I repeat myself, and it's like childhood all over again. Like, I say things and nobody listens. I literally said on this show a few days ago, guys, I bet the Mariners 33.
All right, we got to have. I'm going to interrupt you. I got to interrupt you. We got to have a talk. Your pride has been taking over the show lately. It's a dumb show. Nobody really cares what you have to say. We are now encountering a situation where it's very important. So I'll have a private conversation with Amal. Amal, do me a favor. I know him. Let's pay attention as hard as we can over the next 3 hours because he's going to be bitter all weekend if we don't. So don't look at your iPad. I'm going to do the same thing. 3, 2, 1. Dustin, your take on the Mariners.
I love them. I think if they sneak into the postseason, they're absolutely built to be a dangerous team in the playoffs. I think they have a lot of young arms, which can be scary in the playoffs on one respect if you have them, but also you're really freaking me out with those. I've never seen your eyeballs so big before. Are they brown? They're brown.
I don't know.
You have brown eyes, huh?
I have blue eyes. It's cool. Oh. Can you just keep talking?
I just think they set up very well, and Julio Rodriguez getting hot is the key because he has had a down season, but if he plays up to how he was a year ago, they have every single style of way to beat you. They have power, they have speed, they have pitching. I don't love that they traded Paul Sewald at the back end of the bullpen, but they still have plenty of other powerful arms there. That's why I bet them at 33-1.
Why are you repeating yourself? Didn't you say this the other day?
By the way, Patrick, you know what the problem was in this segment? You kind of interjected your eye color for a second. Now he's going to say next week. Remember when I told you? You mentioned the eye color. I was talking about the Mariners.
There's something missing. There's something lacking outside of work right now for the big guy because he's done that to us both all week where he says, aren't you guys paying attention to what I have to say? I said this yesterday. It's really just a way of saying I was first on this. Let's be fair. Right?
In his defense, though, he has every future known to man. He's going to be before everybody.
he is really good at cataloging the bets he's made because for somebody that's made that many bets, big guy, look at him. Look at right there. Is that all in your notes or is that actually a site?
That's notes and that's all World Series bets.
That's super impressive. Okay, boys, let's get into the preseason. Carolina at the Giants and Cincy at Atlanta. Coming up next, here's Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. It's VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. Hour two, we're going to talk to Josh Klein, does a great job covering the Carolina Panthers on the beat, Riot Report. You can find Josh on Twitter at Josh Klein Rules. Of course, you've got Carolina at MetLife. The Giants laying 3 tonight. That total's jumped up to 38 as we say hi to Josh. Hi, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Can we talk about the lifestyle that enables you to bet real actual dollars and cents on a preseason NFL game? Just like, what can we talk for 10 minutes about that? Like that seems most interesting more than actually what's going to happen tonight at MetLife.
What would be Josh Klein's strategy to betting on a preseason game, one where Carolina's catching 3 points tonight against the Giants? Why don't you lay it out for us?
You know, what's funny is that last week the total was 37.5 against the Jets, and I thought it was super tasty on the over, but then the Panthers basically couldn't get a first down for almost the entire first half. So it didn't really turn out that well, but I'm always tend to lean towards the over because that end-of-the-bench defense, for most teams during the preseason tends to be pretty bad, but then you just end up kicking yourself for almost any bet, I feel like, during the preseason, unless you're winning, of course, and then you're a genius.
Jamal, let me just ask one more question. Josh sounds like he's got a personality. Let's have some fun with this. Tell us about Bryce Young. Tell us about what it was like when you first met him as far as his size. Were you blown away that he was smaller or bigger than you thought he was going to be? Tell us about his personality. Tell us how his teammates kind of gravitate towards him. Give us the whole picture on Bryce Young.
All right. So first of all, telling me that I look like I have a personality is this taking me back to high school. So I appreciate that. That really makes me feel great. Bryce Young, so we all know he's small, right? I mean, the first time that I saw him, I was genuinely surprised. I think a lot of people were. But realistically, once you get used to it, and the way that he carries himself and the way that he understands the game of football, the more that you talk to him, the more that you see him, the more that you interact with him, and the more that you interact with his teammates and his coaches, you see that this guy just has a different kind of mind. You know, like I don't want to throw out these kind of comparisons, but the way that they would talk about the way that Peyton Manning understood NFL defenses and understood what was happening pre-play, it seems like that's where Bryce Young could get to in the future. I'm not saying he's there right now. He hasn't played any NFL games. But realistically, when you talk about the way that he is When you have offensive linemen that are saying he is going into their meetings and talking about their protection schemes, when you have an offensive coordinator that's talking about the way that Bryce Young is breaking down defenses and breaking down tape, and when you talk to Bryce Young and you're like, hey, what do you do outside of football? And he's like, oh, I don't do anything. There was rookie minicamp. He had been in Charlotte for about 3 months, and it was like, hey, you know, what's your experience been like in Charlotte? What have you seen around the city? And he was like, oh, I've pretty much been at the stadium and the hotel, and that's pretty much it. So this is a guy that knows football, that is going to be the smartest guy on the field and know exactly what he's doing every single play. To me, it's not a matter of whether or not he can be good. It's just a matter of whether or not physically he can hold up through an NFL season and through an NFL career. That's obviously the biggest question, right?
Josh, you kind of walked right into my next question, which was going to be, can he stay durable? Because Patrick and I are huge fans of Bryce Young. I think he's a tremendous talent. But based on the way this offensive line has played, is this guy going to survive?
That's a great question. I feel like the question of whether a quarterback is going to survive because of the offensive line is a question that they've been asking in Carolina since the team came into existence in 1995. But I think, you know, this is a guy, he played at Alabama. It's not like he came straight from high school to the NFL and it's like, oh, he's never taken a hit before. They had big boys playing against the Alabama Crimson Tide. They had big boys playing against them last week for the Jets. He took some hits. He got back up. I think, you know, if you go into every game being like, oh, man, I hope that quarterback doesn't get hurt, then you're going to end up in trouble. So I think you just have to go and skate along and say, this is the guy that's going to – this is who we drafted. This is who is going to be the franchise quarterback for the team and not worry about whether or not he's going to get hurt, whether or not he's going to take too many hits, because ultimately you'll just drive yourself crazy if you think that way. But if your question is the Panthers offensive line good, I think that question is definitely still up in the air.
We'll set up the regular season win total and talk about betting in a bit, Josh, but let's continue with vibes. Okay. Matt Rhule to Frank Reich. You were covering the team last year. Tell us the difference. Just give us an overview of the difference with the two head coaches.
Man, when you talk about vibes, I mean, Frank Reich, and just, it's not even Frank Reich, right? It's the rest of his staff. He has over 200 years of coaching experience on that staff, and they run an NFL practice, they run NFL training camp, they are an NFL coaching staff. When you looked at the team the past 3 years, there were questions about whether these guys were ready to coach NFL players. You know, they use a lot of motivational tactics that maybe worked in college but wouldn't work on NFL players that have a huge salary and a huge bank account. So the vibes in Carolina are much different than they were the past few years. And I feel like if there is a strength, I mean, there is a strength to this Carolina Panthers team, and it probably is with that coaching staff and just the heft of experience that they have.
You know, when you look at this team, to me, the one thing that stands out is just the disposition change, it seems like, overall. How much of an impact is that going to have on the field with Bryce Young? You talked about what he brings. You talked about Frank Reich and overall. And then at the top, the owner of this team, Tepper, kind of give me an idea how his personality cascades onto this team as well.
Well, one thing that we know about David Tepper is he doesn't like to lose. And he has said it multiple times that he likes winning and winning, and whether that's on the field or whether that's in finance or whether that's, you know, in any other aspect of his business. So he hates it when they lose. So it's a bad time in that building when they lose on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's a bad week. So I think that trickles down a lot. One of the first things that he did was as you enter the kind of the corporate offices area, he has a big trophy shelf that has an NFC Championship trophy and then a big empty shelf where there should be a Super Bowl trophy. And that kind of speaks a lot about the kind of owner that David Tepper is. So I think that he wants to win in the. I think that, you know, he was he brought in an inexperienced coach. He took a big swing with Matt Rhule. It obviously didn't work. And so now he's going back the other way with a very experienced veteran core NFL guy like Frank Reich, and the most NFL coaches that you can have on staff, and he's going to see, and he's going to hope that certainly works, but he likes to make a splash, and you saw it with the Panthers trading up from 9-1 to go up there and get Bryce Young. He doesn't like to wait.
Josh Klein. Sorry, Josh, not to interrupt you, but Riot Report, Carolina Panthers on the beat. Josh, tell me this. the biggest, come week one, the biggest strength on the field for the Panthers will be this, fill in the blank, and the biggest weakness will be what?
Well, I think the biggest weakness is their depth in general. You know, this is a team that has guys that are skewed across the offensive, across the depth chart on that first string that are good. They have a lot of talent. They brought in basically a brand new, almost every single skill player on this team is brand new, including Bryce Young. So I think that they are they don't have a ton of depth. So if they have injuries, especially at like the corner position, they're going to be in trouble. But I think that the front seven of this defense, you look at how much they've invested into that over the past few years. You have guys like Derek Brown. Brian Burns is one of the best up-and-coming edge rushers in the NFL. Shaq Thompson is a veteran leader. They went out and they got Justin Houston as an edge rusher opposite Brian Burns. So I think that they can, and especially with this new kind of 3-4 under scheme that, or 4 under that Ajira Evero is going to be running, I think that they're going to have some success, especially early in the season on defense. And I think that ultimately it's going to be up to there is no question, right? It is just a question of whether or not Bryce Young is going to be the franchise quarterback, and that is really the only thing that needs to be answered in 2023. Yes, it would be great if they went over their win total. Yes, it would be great if they won the NFC South. But if Bryce Young wins Rookie of the Year and is their franchise quarterback, looks like the guy that can play there for the next decade, then I think that is enough of an answer for the Carolina Panthers in 2023.
Their season win total is 7.5, 4-1 to win the division. Where do you see them placing in the NFC South? Because there's a lot of question marks surrounding everybody.
So I'm such a huge believer in quarterback drives everything, right? It just seems like that has always been the case. And when you look at the rest of the NFC South, I don't see a successful quarterback in Atlanta. I'm sorry, I know a lot of people like them. They're favored to win the NFC South, right? To me, I just don't see it. I feel like this is a similar team that they had last year. Desmond Ritter, I don't think is a quarterback that can produce a winning team. Yes, they added Bijan Robinson, but the reality is I'm not sure that I trust the Atlanta Falcons. New Orleans Saints have Derek Carr. He has shown that he can be a good quarterback on a bad team, and I think that's what he's going to be in New Orleans. The Bucs are probably going to be among the worst teams in the league. So if you're looking at a team that you might want to throw some money on, the Carolina Panthers are not a bad bet. I mean, just by the strength of their coaching staff and not making mistakes, you feel like in those one-score games they're going to be more successful. And ultimately, if Bryce Young can play 17 games and get better over the course of the season, I do think that this is kind of, they're certainly a wild card to go over that win total, make the playoffs, or win the NFC South.
You sound like a betting man. We're in our last minute here, Josh. So it sounds to me, if you were betting on Bryce Young, you'd say yes at success?
I would. Obviously it comes with the caveat of whether or not he can stay healthy, but that's the caveat with everybody, right? CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, all these, I was going to say Will Levis, but I feel like he might have some other things battling him besides injury risk. But I think those are, obviously whether or not they can stay healthy is whether or not they can be successful. Everybody assumes because Bryce Young is smaller that he has a greater chance of being injured. To me, I'm not so sure about that. So yes, if you're asking me if it's a binary equation, yes or no, I would bet on Bryce Young being successful.
Binary equation. Not only does he have a personality, he's a smarty pants. Josh Klein, Riot Report. He's on the beat for the Panthers at Josh Klein Rules. You killed it, kid. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. What's Bryce Young Rookie of the Year odds? You guys should know.
Five to one.
Let's hear it.
5-1.
5-1.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort by sport, matchup, event time, and more. You can also check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit and ROI. Tail fade, whoever's hot, whoever's not, for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up for as little as $19 for your first month. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, our next guest, I was lucky enough to meet through Dustin Sweetelson, and frankly, I think I like him more. He is a savant and we connected over soccer a couple of World Cups ago. He hasn't written, he hasn't called since, but it's all good. Abe Gordon, he's a host down in Atlanta, 92.9 The Game, the Abe TL show on Sundays. That's a great job. At Abe Gordon on Twitter. Now, we started connecting over soccer, and we had a ridiculous conversation right before this segment started. The big guy said, make sure you ask Abe about Messi being overrated. Now, I'm going to warn you, this interview will stop in like 30 seconds if you do say that Messi is overrated, so tread carefully. Abe, is Messi overrated?
I do not think that Messi, the player, is overrated. And I understand the numbers and everything with subscribers. We've gone through 2 weeks down here in Atlanta where I had to remind people that, hey, there's a Leagues Cup game on tonight. Did you know that Messi is playing? No. People didn't know. People are missing his games. And for a guy to come in where I thought there would be like very obvious pushes to make sure people knew he was playing that night, that hasn't happened. Now, granted, it's the League's Cup, so we'll see when MLS restarts play this week. And I think it'll be pretty obvious that his games will be featured and people will know when he's playing. I have been shocked, absolutely shocked, at the lack of promotion that Messi has a game tonight. It has gone absolutely under the radar since the time he made his debut. So I, as a player, look, the run that they are on, winning road games, beating playoff teams, all that stuff, there's no denying the impact he has on the field. I'm just a little surprised that there are entire games that kind of fly under the radar when this guy steps on the pitch.
Just to nerd out for a second, so what you're saying, and Amal, I think what Abe's saying is the star that is Messi hasn't necessarily translated to the States. But what you and I can agree on, Abe, is because you follow MLS as well. They just went to the Philadelphia Union. And again, Inter Miami was the worst team in MLS soccer before Messi got there. They just went up to Philly and toyed with potentially, over the last 5 years, the best team in MLS. Like, what he's doing is ridiculous with this team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and it's interesting because it's not just him, but he's obviously the inspiration for it. But like Joseph Martinez, a guy that started here for Atlanta United, he was a league MVP, and he was invisible. And yep. Since Messi has shown up, he's been outstanding. He's scoring goals. He's setting Messi up. He's playing a role that fits him probably better. And you're in a situation where, like, in 5 or 6 games, Inter Miami has scored almost as many as they scored in, what, 22 or 23 games before Messi got there. There's no denying the impact of what he's had. And they were the worst team in MLS. And you start to wonder, with, like, 10 games left for these teams, can they somehow climb in? I mean, they've only got to get into the playoffs to be as scary as anyone else. It's going to be a lot of tough work for them to reach the playoff line. It might be too much to ask, but boy, if they can get there, even if they're 7 seed, 6 seed, they're going to enter as favorites. It's kind of wild to see just how big of a switch they have flipped since he entered the fray.
Abe, let's go to a player who's on the same caliber as Messi in his dreams. That's Desmond Ridder.
I mean, what a transition. Messi to Ridder. I love it. Keep going.
None of us here are sold on him. Dustin isn't, Patrick isn't, and I'm not. Tell us where you come out on him. I think there's talent around him. Arthur Smith, we all agree, is a very good coach. But I don't know. What's is there not anybody else in the state of Georgia that can play quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be realistic about what you're asking him to do. And I think that's the difference on how he can perform and how this team can perform overall. I think when you added Bijan Robinson, it made a very clear statement that you're not asking Desmond Ridder to be Trevor Lawrence. You're asking him to be Ryan Tannehill, to use a couple of AFC South quarterbacks. And I think that's realistic. I really do. I think it's less about Ridder. Everyone wants to make it about Ridder, and he is the question mark. He can't be absolutely dreadful. He can't be terrible. But he doesn't have to go out and do things that other quarterbacks in the league are doing. And you go right over the road to Athens. And I know that Stetson Bennett, like what he did was kind of wild and odd. He's not an ultimately overall talented quarterback. He looked fine with the Rams week one. He's not their future plan. But that guy led a team to two national championships because of the talent around him. I think when you look at Desmond Ridder, you just got to let the rest of the talent eat. It's not about him making these tight window throws. It's about just making the right reads. And everyone's hesitant to use the term game manager. I don't know why. Every time we use the term game manager to describe a college quarterback, that guy's a winner. That guy's got like 40 or 50 career wins and is one of the top five BCS guys. I mean, so when you look at what we're asking Ridder to do down here, just manage the game, get the ball to the playmakers you know you have. You got three guys who were drafted top 10 on your offense in a playmaking position. Get those guys the ball, let them do the work. You don't really have to go out there and be a gunslinger like some other quarterbacks across the league.
Abe Gordon, killing it, doing a great job. 92.9 The Game down in Atlanta. He joins us here on Sharp Money. Will we see Heinicke? Let's continue the Ridder conversation, okay? I like what you said. Do we see Heinicke? He does have, you're smiling because it is weird. In D.C., it's like a cult of personality. People just gravitate to this dude. I've joked a million times that he just throws YOLO balls. He doesn't have a strong arm, but his teammates love him. Will we see Heinicke this year?
You might see him tonight in preseason game number two, but if you're seeing Taylor Heinicke, the season's down the drain. I mean, you're pretty much stuck with Desmond Ridder, ride or die, if he's healthy. I don't know if there's a level of this guy's stinking up the joint to where you get to Heinicke. I mean, look, you could come in and bring Heinicke and win a couple games, but ultimately you're trying to build a future here. And if that future's not with Desmond Ridder, it's certainly not with Taylor Heinicke long term. Either Ridder is your long term quarterback and you start to see that development this year, or you're moving on from him, in my opinion. If he's not good enough this year to win you the NFC South and make you threaten potentially a home playoff game and maybe a playoff win, he's not your guy either. And so you're only seeing Heinicke in the worst situation, which is where Ridder has gone down. I think even through him potentially playing awful, you still get him playing and not Heinicke.
When you look at this team defensively, tell me what are some of the strengths you see? And I want to ask you very specifically about a rookie out of Utah, Clark Phillips. What do you think about him and where he could potentially be? Because he dropped in the draft compared to where it looked like he was potentially going to go.
Yeah, I mean, let's start there. Clark Phillips is a guy that at the end of the day just doesn't have the size to play an outside corner in the NFL. He's going to be inside. But I will tell you this, if he was a little bit bigger, he would have been a first rounder like you're referencing. This is a guy that was the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, and he had flashed in camp big time. I mean, he made a lot of plays. There was a lot made early on in camp. And look, we've said it in preseason and training camp, don't judge everyone by these one-on-ones and the reps and all that stuff. But he and Drake London have a thing. And day one out there, he wanted it. And he got an early interception on Drake London. And this was a guy that has flash. He missed a couple of practices due to injury, but he's going to be in that discussion along with D. Alford, who we saw have a punt return for nickel corner. He'll play inside, and I think he can have a big impact. But you asked about the strength of this defense, and it's going to be the secondary with the addition of Clark Phillips, with D. Alford. You get Jeff Okuda, Mike Hughes, Trey Flowers. You got A.J. Terrell, who I think is primed for a real big bounce back year in terms of statistics. I think one year, probably statistics were a little over what he was. Last year, they were a little under what he was. But obviously, the big free agent addition of Jesse Bates is going to really be the cherry on the top of that secondary milkshake. They are really, really talented on that side of the ball. And if you can get some sort of pass rush, which is ultimately the question with this defense, that's where you can really see the secondary take control of some of these games.
Quick answer. We'll come back, Abe, and continue the conversation. The biggest strength for the Falcons is what? And the biggest weakness is what going into the year?
The biggest weakness is probably health. Like we just don't know about Kyle Pitts. And if you don't have Kyle Pitts, I think the offense falls apart, to be honest. You're pretty weak on the offensive line in depth as well. But the strength is also in that realm. It's playmakers. They've got more playmakers than almost every team in the NFL. Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, let those guys get the ball, and let's see how much work they can get in.
Look at him. He didn't even want to be a host. Now he's killing it. He's Abe Gordon down in Atlanta. And we're going to continue the conversation. We'll talk about that division as well. Talking Atlanta sports with Abe next here at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
I, Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. You look at the calendar, it's Friday. What does that mean? Somich joins. Mike Somich, of course, VSIN betting analyst. Sounds nice to say that, officially part of the team. RacingDudes.com handicapper as well. You want to get involved in some horse racing, you can find Mike on Twitter at SomoBomb18. And as we say hi to Somich, and again, a congratulations, as he's going to be, if you like VSIN and you like football, you're going to get a lot of Mike Somich. We'll have the official announcement next week, but Saturdays and Sundays, bam, smack dab in the middle of the day, you're going to have 3 to 4 hours of Mike Somich every Saturday and Sunday. But I want to start here as I talk to Somich and Amal and Dustin. I made a big life decision today, and I'd like to get the three of your take on what I did. I am adjusting. I'll start with you, Dustin, because I think this will be curious to you. I made a big life decision. I'm going to the stand-up desk. Now, I ordered a nice one. Whether or not I can put it together is yet to be seen, or if I'm going to have to go task rabbit like a loser. But I got a stand-up desk coming Saturday, big guy. Your boy is standing to work. Thoughts?
Standing up is usually only used for when you are trying to express more anger. But however, I will say this. I am hosting here tomorrow, and hopefully I will be able to stand up the entire show as well, because I prefer when I'm hosting to stand up. I find sitting for 3 hours to be absolutely brutal at 38 years old, and you are a much older man than me.
Okay, first off, not much. Wow. Secondly, an interesting way, Mike and Amal, for him to flex about hosting when I'm talking about myself and standing. But anyway, Amal, thoughts on me standing? It's a big life move for a single 45-year-old.
I'm a big advocate of it. I like it. First of all, anytime you do any kind of public speaking or what have you, I mean, I get this is not necessarily a public speech, but it's much better. You just are able to kind of convey your message in a much more profound manner when you're standing up when you're speaking.
Wait, hold on. I think I completely confused you guys. I'm not going to be standing up during the show.
Oh.
I just got a stand-up desk for when I prepare for the show in the morning. Somich, you're a very progressive guy. It feels like you're the type of dude that does cold plunges. How about standing at the desk? Is this like new age?
I've lived the stand-up desk life, so I've got some experience on this one. I actually, yeah, well, you got it. Like, I agree with you. When you are staring at a computer for a while, it is so much nicer to be able to stand up, sit down, go through that process. As for doing it during the show, if you were doing it during the show, I was going to tell you that is a mistake. For me, if I'm standing, I use my hands so much more to talk, and I move around way too much to be able to be actually on one of these type shows. It's why I consistently sit for these. But the stand-up desk is life-changing. I mean, you don't realize how much better your body feels if you just stand up for 30 minutes, then sit down for 30 minutes, stand up for 30 minutes. It gets the blood flowing. You don't feel as stiff in your lower back. So it's a strong move. However, I do have to say, if your big life change here is a stand-up desk, we might need to get you out a little bit more, Patrick.
Well, a couple of things. It's very dangerous on a Friday to say blood flow and stiff around Dustin Sweetelson. So we're just going to chill. We're going to chill with that. And big guy, you thought I was talking about standing during the show.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to be working in the morning at a stand-up desk.
I like to sit for my prep because that's like the time I'm at peace. And then I see a mall and I'm in here and I'd like to stand and match the parsing energy.
Okay. By the way, off topic, Somich, are you going full beard to look sharp?
I appreciate it, man. I'm experimenting here, right? So I've never had facial hair until about 2 years ago, and it was always patchy. So now we're trying to figure out how to make it work. So now we're going with the full beard, but trimming it a little more. It's a process, man. This thing doesn't grow overnight.
More importantly, what does wifey think?
Wifey is the one who pushed the beard on me. So she is the one who pushed this forward. And so I am fully accepting it and trying to figure out how to make it look as good as possible.
That's like getting a new husband.
You just got to wait. Dustin and I were on the same wavelength. That's called cuckold, okay?
Yeah. I mean, she's trying to experience something new, and this is a good way to get around those rules of marriage, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey, whatever keeps it hot, Dustin, you just got to keep it working.
She looked at him sideways one day and said, you know what I'm thinking? We're going to grow some facial hair, Mike, because what's going on over here?
We used to joke all the time because the only time, when I was working in the business world, it was a no facial hair policy where I was working. So every time we go on vacation for 2 or 3 weeks, I just let it go. And that's when she decided that this was something that needed to be permanent. So when I switched over and started doing horse racing and sports gambling full time, she's like, all right, now you're growing that thing out. You got no choice.
I'm going to beat them all to the joke. Who'd you work for? The Steinbrenners? Okay. Too easy. Too easy. Samich, so Amal mentioned it when he was talking about Seattle, that he knows that you were high on the team. We're sitting 9.5. Now, you know, you can find a 9 out there as far as regular season win total. I'll get you in division. We were talking about JSN and potentially his numbers as offensive rookie of the year. I mean, they're loaded on the outside. It's a team and the Seahawks you're high on. I'll let you run with it. What's up?
Yeah, I don't think people realize how good last year's draft class was. They took two offensive linemen, both tackles, Cross and Lucas, in the first two rounds. Everyone knows about Walker III, the running back who's going to be back this year. They also took Woolen, who's going to be their number two cornerback this year. All four of them popped. I mean, Walker, I think, is a very good running back. He's going to have a nice offensive line to work behind. And Cross and Lucas specifically, the two tackles, two of the toughest positions to play in the NFL, right tackle and left tackle, were both very good for about 12 weeks. And Woolen was a top 15, top 20 cornerback for about 12 weeks. All of them hit the rookie wall last year. So a big part of playing Seattle here is saying that you believe in the progression of these guys, that this offensive line is going to be significantly improved because you have two second-year offensive tackles who both showed early and then faded down the stretch. By the way, that's also when Geno Smith's stats started to fade. He was top five PFF, top five ESPN quarterback through the majority of the season last year. About week 12, week 13, the offensive line started to struggle. That's when he started to struggle. Their biggest weakness on defense last year was the run game. They were giving up too many yards on the ground. They bring in Wagner to address that problem. I love the draft. I love that they have a cornerback on the other side of Woolen now with Witherspoon, who they took in the first round. I love the outside receivers. You've got three legitimate weapons out there. And I understand you kind of have to believe in Geno Smith here if you want to make the case for the Seahawks. Well, I kind of believe in Geno Smith. If you look at what he is good at, it is quick throws, checkdowns, facing defenses that he'll take what they give them. Well, that's what NFL defenses do now. They play this too high shell, and they're willing to let you get these 5, 6, 10-yard completions and make you drive down the field that way. That was what Geno Smith is actually good at. This is the first time he's been playing when that defense has been implemented consistently. If that's what he sees again this year, I think they're able to take a step forward, specifically with all these second-year players and rookies who I think are going to be impactful here right out of the gate for them. And on top of that, I heard them all say, you know, well, 44% of their wins came against the Cardinals and the Rams. Guess who they play four times this year? The Cardinals and the Rams, and they are both still terrible. So the schedule gets tough in one segment, and that's where they have to play San Francisco twice and Dallas and Philadelphia in four back-to-back weeks. But the nice part about this schedule as well is that there's winnable games early. They get games against Washington. They get games against the Steelers. They get games against the Titans. So games that are winnable late as well. And the both games against San Francisco, they have a slight edge here. So the first game is a Thursday night in Seattle. So 4 days rest. If you want to play a Thursday night, you're playing a division game, you want to be the home team. And then the second game is on a Sunday. Well, the 49ers are coming off a Monday night football game into that game. And Seattle is coming off a Thursday night game into that game, which is going to be on Thanksgiving. So 10 days rest versus 5 days rest. So rest advantage in both of the games that they're going to be facing San Francisco. Winnable games early, winnable games late, and a lot of progression in really important spots on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball.
I think Mike makes a ton of great pro arguments for the Seahawks. For me, it's a combination of, I will tell you, I am not as down, Mike, on Geno Smith as maybe some other people are. And I like what you said. They've got some great talent on the perimeter. Obviously, Lockett's a guy, JSN, but DK Metcalf as well. I think this team could be dangerous. I did like Cross a lot coming out of Mississippi State, Patrick. I think this team can be dangerous, but what concerns me is defensively, guys, they were not great. They were poor against the run. The other thing is when you look through the schedule, you mentioned, Mike, there are some patches where it gets a bit challenging. They do have the Cardinals and Rams combined four times. But man, this is a team. We saw them beat the Lions last year, gave up 45 points in that game. They beat the Jets down the stretch, who were anemic. I just don't know if what they accomplished last year was a product of them being a better and a good team, or the benefit of playing just a bad schedule, Denver, the Jets, and I mentioned the other teams in there. So I'm a little bit taken wait and see approach. I still think the Niners are the class of the West.
You can respond, Mike. Go ahead.
I won't disagree with you on the Niners, the class of the West. I finished my power rankings today. I have the Niners at 7. I've got this Seahawks team at 12. So I do have the Niners rated higher than the Seahawks here. When you look at the overall ratings for the teams, but this is a Seattle team who I think has a big chance of stepping forward, and you are dead on. They had a lot of winnable games in the schedule last year. I don't think any of us expected them to be as good as they were last year. I know that going into the season, we thought this was going to be a low-rated team, maybe one of the four or five worst in the NFL. The defensive side is the concern, right? If those two offensive tackles play well, this offense is going to be very, very good. They need Jamal Adams to come back. He's supposed to come off the PUP list in the week two or week three. That will help the run game. Wagner helps the run game. You now have two legitimate cornerbacks. This defense could actually take a massive step forward compared to what you saw last year because of these offseason additions and the second year in the system for some of these guys.
By the way, I don't even know if there's a question. Would the three of you agree with me? By far and away, the biggest surprise of last year was Seattle winning 9 games. Like, we had Seattle beat reporters talking about 3-4 wins maybe last year.
That was my number, 3 or 4 for them last year. Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
Yeah, I thought they were in the Bryce Young sweepstakes.
100%. $1.60 on the 49ers in division. That does feel steep, though, Samich. +195 on the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, this Seahawks number has gotten bet down pretty aggressively. You could get this at close to 3-1 earlier this year, and it's been bet all the way down to +195. Honestly, if you're going to bet either of these, just bet the exacta, because I don't see any way the Rams or Cardinals are finishing second in this division. You can get a better price if you play the exact finish Seattle-San Francisco or San Francisco-Seattle than you can betting either to win the division.
Samich pulled the Seahawks. Thanks for asking. I'll take it from here. He couldn't wait to talk about Seattle on this show. When we come back, he's got some week one plays, and we'll talk about the pre tonight with Samich here on Sharp Money.